This is episode 10 of Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake.
People disappear all the time. Most are found. Eventually. Disappearances, after all, have explanations. Usually.
Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I hate mid-season finales.
I know. My goodness. God.
I hate them with a visceral passion.
You know, and it's okay when you're taking time off for holidays, like, you know, when you have to take it off because there's Thanksgiving and Christmas, and you pretty much have all of December off from your good shows, but it comes back in January?
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen. This comes back April 4th.
Like, how? That is an exceptionally long time to wait.
I feel like we're waiting pretty much a year.
You want to know why I think they're doing this?
Why?
It's because they want to set up a natural timeline for this show. They want to, like, compete with Game of Thrones. And if they want to compete with Game of Thrones, when do they have to have it on?
Game of Thrones comes out in April. And
that's
they're fools
right.
If they compete against Game of Thrones. They better stay on Saturday nights.
Well, they're thinking, the thinking, I think, is this. It's going to be Saturday night and people are still going to watch Game of Thrones on Sunday.
Yes.
So they're thinking, okay, well, if people are in the mindset of watching Game of Thrones, they're going to be in the mindset of watching Outlander. And the people who are watching Game of Thrones already have premium cable TV. So they might as well watch us too while we're at it.
So I
think that's the reason why they're doing it. Not because, like, oh, they didn't believe in it or because they didn't have enough money for it. All of season one is already shot.
I'm wondering what's in its place. Like, what is on Saturday nights at that time that would be taking its place, that would be airing during that normal time? Because April is a natural break for some shows.
Correct. I agree. And it's odd to have it during that time. Normally what happens is you start the show in the summer, or you start it like when Walking Dead starts, like in October.
Yeah.
You start like when Lost used to start, or 24 used to start in May. That's usually when show, like the good shows, begin their run. But hey, April is their choice, and I don't blame them because they want to compete with Game of Thrones.
Now we have a lot to look forward to in April. For those who do watch Game of Thrones and Outlander, we're never going to leave our house.
We're just going to sit inside all weekend.
Yeah, as the weather gets nicer, we're still going to be hermits.
We're going to be like those little hobbits that just stay in. Your friend's going to be like, hey guys, you want to come out with us? You'd be like, nope, sorry.
No, yeah. We're going to draw the shades and be like, we're not home, actually.
we're going to sit home, drink whiskey, and watch Outlander. And then drink some, what's that stuff that your brother used to drink?
Mead.
We're going to drink mead and watch Game of Thrones.
Perfect. Perfection.
I like it.
My goodness. So we, you had a post on Facebook, speaking of 24 and Jack Bauer.
That's right.
That ruffled some feathers, Blake.
Yeah, listen. This is a quote that I happen to say, and Mary put it up on Facebook. When I said, listen, Jamie's great, but we all know that the king of all men is Jack Bauer. That's just the way that it is.
I totally disagree.
Oh, I don't know how you can disagree with that. You really think that Jamie is the king of all men?
Because Jamie is a real man.
Jamie poops. Well, we haven't seen Jamie poop yet.
We've saw William.
That's not Jamie.
Well, you're right.
She's like, go down, wind! You know?
I would have said the same thing. Who knows what they had for lunch?
Go at least 50 yards away and downwind.
She's such a queen. Such a queen. Oh, my goodness. You're on the road, and yet you're telling this guy how far away he has to go to relieve himself. Anyway, you said that the king of all men was Jack Bauer.
Yeah, and a lot of people disagree with that. They're like, oh, my God, Blake, we were actually liking you. You were on the Jamie train. You were stepping foot on there, and now you have this. And listen, at least I ain't comparing him to Justin Bieber, all right, anymore. As long as I'm not doing that, I think I'm still on the Jamie train.
Okay. You know, just talk to me after you've seen the rest of season one.
Okay, I mean, I'll get behind that.
Okay.
But Jack Bauer right now is the king of all men. There's just no way around it. I'm sorry. When you're Jack Bauer, anything goes.
I completely disagree. Anyway, Blake and I came out with a bit of a teaser that we have something cool in store for you. So we're not going to let you know exactly what that is yet.
I know we wanted to, but we couldn't get it absolutely 100% confirmed
yet.
Yes,
but you're going to have fun in the hiatus. We'll tell you that. Okay, so Outlander Cast is going to continue. It may not be on a weekly basis. We need to get back into our other podcast, Parent Cast, about parenting.
I know, which we've totally neglected of you guys.
We've been so obsessed with Outlander Cast that parenting has gone out the window. but we do have a couple.
We have at least three episodes planned. That are right off the bat that I know of that we haven't confirmed 100% yet, but we got three of them planned right off the bat.
So it has to do with episodes. Nonetheless, make sure you are subscribed in the iTunes store and you will get this automatically sent to your device.
Correct. And keep your eye on Twitter too, because the announcement will be coming. And I'm sorry that we were not able to provide that announcement today. Truly, I am. I wish we could. But keep your eye on Twitter, keep your eye on Facebook for Outlandercast, because we will have that announcement, I'd say, within the next few days.
Yes. Before we get into this week's episode recap, we just wanted to read a couple of the reviews from those of you who went onto iTunes and reviewed us. Each time one of you reviews us, it's like a hug, a virtual hug over the internet to Blake and I. And we honestly love it and appreciate it. You make us feel a lot less lonely here in the Ocean State. Jules from Vancouver, USA. I didn't even know there was Vancouver in the USA.
Is there really?
Well, that's what she put.
Wow, that a girl.
She said that Mary and Blake are so much fun to listen to. They do a great job breaking down each episode, and she loves getting a man's point of view, and Blake's Boston accent is the best.
Wicked smart.
Mary represents the ladies, and I love for all things Jamie. Swoon. Aww. Keep up the good work. I'll be listening. Thank you so much, Jules. That was so sweet.
And then we got one from iTunes Folk. And iTunes Folk, I wish I knew your name and where you were from, but whatever. They said it's an irreverent and insightful podcast. I love listening to these two talk about the Outlander episodes. It's like sitting with two good friends to experience the show.
Aww.
Which is kind of the idea, actually. Mary and Blake never fail to make me laugh out loud several times per podcast. Blake's insights from the male perspective bring freshness to a story and characters that I thought I knew.
Ooh.
Thanks, Mary and Blake.
Thank you, iTunes Folk.
iTunes Folk, you are more than welcome. We are here to do this actually for you guys. I mean, we're here to do it for us, but mainly for you, and we'd love to do it.
And so, friends, please feel free to leave us reviews. We will make sure to read your reviews as they come, because they do. They just make us so happy.
Oh, and one last thing, too. A lot of you guys commented on our video that we put up on Facebook. And if you haven't got a chance to see it yet, go to our Facebook page. And we described what our date night looks like without our son. And we were glad that we could actually share it with all you guys. It was fun. We got Sassanach wasted. We live tweeted. We said some things we probably shouldn't have. But you know what? It was all in the name of good fun. And I'm glad that we could share it with you guys. So check that out on Facebook. And it's actually kind of funny, because we talk about our cats and our kid. And
yeah, you get to see our cats.
And especially Sassanach, our cat, which is great. Aww. So thanks, guys.
All right. Now it's time to break down this past episode, the mid-season finale, titled Both Sides Now. Let's get a huge chunk of this episode out of the way.
Okay.
Let's talk Frank.
Oh.
Okay. Frank, in my opinion, stole this entire episode. And I'm going to tell you, non-book reader, something. We didn't get to read this because the book is from Claire's perspective.
Uh-huh.
So seeing Frank go through this made me love Frank even more.
So none of the stuff that happened with Frank, what happened in the book?
Is in the book Outlander.
Wow, really?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, man. See, now this is awesome.
Yes.
Thank you, Ron Moore. Thank you for doing this.
But mind you, it is from Claire's perspective. So how could we have read it? And it really helps because, you know, being from Claire's perspective, you just see all this lovely sexy time that goes on between her and Jamie. And yes, she's battling a lot of stuff. But to see Frank and to hear that he has been waiting 6 weeks that 100 square miles have been searched. There have been 175 interviews and 1,000 man hours have been spent looking for Claire.
It's still nothing.
Nothing. And people keep telling him, oh, your wife's with that guy. Your wife's with Jamie.
And
basically,
I love when he was like, she's not with another man. And they immediately cut to Claire and Jamie sitting on this ridge.
Oh, yeah. And Jamie's saying, is it usual what happens when I touch you? Claire blushes and is like, not really.
I mean, it's very nice.
It's very nice, but no, it's not. It's unusual.
It's not unusual to be touched by anyone.
Oh, my God. Tom Jones.
Anyway, so I want to talk about these Frank scenes. And because this episode, much like the wedding episode, which was also directed by the same person, they had a lot of different flashbacks. You got to see a lot of the well-rounded story. Then we see Frank talking with Reverend Wakefield, and he too is coming up with nothing.
He's like, yeah, she might be living on frogs and fish.
Before that even happened, we see him getting Sassenach wasted in the bar.
Oh, yeah. No. See, now we're talking here.
Brokenhearted. My God, he is all done. His heart is so broken.
Everybody
and up
is
comes
done with him.
Sally. You can call me Sally. I'm sorry. Frank, you know what happened when she said that? Frank's little detective brain, his Jack Bauer brain,
yes,
went off, okay? If anyone's like Jack Bauer, I'm going to stand here right now and say it's Frank. All right?
Because Frank
brought it this episode.
Frank brought the bad news to these guys, and these guys deserved it. I love the Jack Bauer comparison, and that was not planned, I swear to God. But it actually kind of reminded me of Jason Bourne a little bit. The way that he took these two guys out was just brilliant.
Well, how dare she play on him? Of course, she's seeing that it's a very exciting reward. Meet me after midnight. What good happens after midnight?
Behind the bar.
Yeah, that sounds great. So Frank is desperate, but also the little investigator Frank, the private, you know, sneaky Frank who's taught all these guys to lie and understand liars, his alarm is still going off.
Yeah, because he knows. I mean, yeah, like
that's why he brought that. He brought that. What the heck was that in his hand?
That is a what's called a baton or a nightstick, otherwise known as a blackjack.
No.
Yes.
No. No way.
Yes, it is. That's 100% what it's also called. It's called a blackjack. Because, you know, there has to be that kind of on-the-nose symbolism.
Oh, my God. Some props manager had the best time.
He was like, guys,
the best idea.
I have such a good idea. Guess what we're going to do? We're going to make this guy carry a blackjack.
Oh, my God. That's so cool. But, you know, it's raining. I was so upset. He comes out of the bar, and she's like, where were you? And Frank's like, I'm obviously on time. I'm Frank. Like, I'm the most put-together guy ever. And she thought he was going to come early. Neither of them has an umbrella. You're in Scotland.
In the Highlands.
It rains a lot. Why did neither of you have an umbrella or at least like one of those little hats that, you know, those plastic hats that protect your hair? Goodness. So he goes into the back and he can already start to tell things are going bad. Those guys come in, beat him up. He whips out the blackjack, pummels this guy, if not to death, to near death.
Yep.
She's freaking out. And then we see the true family resemblance of Black Jack Randall and Frank as Frank chokes a woman.
I mean, like chokes her within an inch of his life.
But that's the difference. But that is the difference. I don't think Black Jack would have stopped with any of those people.
No, I don't think so. But man, that was close. That was close. The thing that I noticed was as he was beating the hell out of that guy with the blackjack, you saw Frank's eyes widen, just like how BGR's eyes widened when he realized that he was making a masterpiece when he was torturing Jamie, giving him the lash. Mm-hmm. You saw it, and it was scary almost.
Because it was emotional. That was the moment when beating someone became emotional to Black Jack Randall. Mm-hmm. And this is how Frank was able to take out his emotions about being disappointed and upset and scared and angry.
Mm-hmm.
It was an emotional release for him. And what a beautiful scene, just because we're not used to seeing Frank like that. And frankly, book readers were not expecting that at all. And then he goes and he talks with Reverend Wakefield, who's pretty much cool with it. He's like, it's okay. We all kind of take a sip from the bad juice every once in a while. But those guys were drinking a lot, and you had your sip, and now you need to be done with it. Okay? Don't go to the dark side.
And that's the thing that you're right. Is this the difference between Frank and Blackjack Randall? Mm-hmm. Is this the difference where Frank recognizes, holy crap, I went a little too far here. He comes clean about it. He starts talking about it. Have I gone too far? And I think there is a difference, but Blackjack's in there. He is definitely in there. It makes you wonder if Frank is the right choice.
Can't you argue that everyone has a little Blackjack in them?
Yeah, I would say so. Especially when it comes to, look, man, my wife has been missing now for 6 weeks, and you're going to come try to take my money, and like I'm kind of like Jack Bauer right now.
After everyone keeps telling me that she ran off with some guy, and I wouldn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. So he's down and out. He is down and out, and he finally listens about Craig Nadun.
Reverend Wakefield's housekeeper tells him that, oh my God, we should tell Frank about the rocks. Like this is true. This really happens.
And this is pretty much by the book what they say happens to the guys. Like, a girl disappears and you can't find her body, and you didn't think she would run away like this. This is textbook. This is textbook druid material, songwriting material.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, druid songwriting material. So, we have this issue here. And I'm glad that Frank approached it the way that he did, which was, he wasn't like, oh, you're wrong. He listened. And eventually, even though he didn't agree with it, he said, I just don't share your beliefs. And I think this is says a lot about Frank. Because he not only respects the history, but he respects the person that is telling him that this might happen. He's not going to jump to conclusions. He's not going to spout off. At least she is trying something other than, hey, we interviewed all these people, and sorry. He even tells the detective, I had low expectations of you guys, and you met those expectations very well. Like, if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. Like, you guys are a bunch of losers.
I loved that line. I want to save it for when I have to deal with people at, like, the DMV or someplace where, you know, they just don't care about you, and you're there all day, and you know they're not even going to care when you say that to them. Because it's true, you have low expectations when you go to the DMV. You're going to sit there, mm-hmm. and then you're going to finally get up there 5 hours later, and they're going to say, oh, sorry, you needed to get the orange paper. And no, you can't fill it out now. You need to go get it and then wait back in line.
Oh, it makes you just want to kill people.
And that's what I would love to say. You know, I had low expectations for you to begin with, and you met them.
It was a total burn by Frank.
Loved.
We put that on Twitter. It was a wicked good burn. I definitely want to use that going forward. But at least she is thinking outside of the box, right? At least she's bringing something to the table that isn't just normal. And I think Frank appreciates that.
Yes.
I think he says, okay, you know what? You're crazy, but that's okay.
But she's not crazy, and that's the great part. Is she is so strong in this, and she's not this kook. If it was just a random person who came up to him, you know, off the street, then it might be different.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a woman he's gotten to know and trust. And Reverend Wakefield obviously trusts her, mm-hmm. and she's saying it. And she's saying, listen, man, not everybody gets this, but this is old traditions.
Yep, I get it. I totally get it. And ultimately, I think that Frank ends up getting it as well. Because you end up seeing him, as you're driving past Craig Nadun, he stops. And you have this like slight bit of like apprehension on going forward. It's his only chance, and he said, "Well, screw it. I might as well just try it.
Let's see if Mrs. Graham was right."
Yeah, Mrs. Graham gets it right, man. So, but then we also had that weird little scene with the motorcycle like zipping right past him.
What was that?
I don't know what that exactly was. I mean, I feel like it's got to be important because I mean, it did kind of tip him off to like you know, go to Craig Nadun. Is it like Jamie and Claire like in the future riding off together? Is that like a outlandish theory of the week that Jamie and Claire go back into the 40s?
I just saw it as him being jealous, like these two people happily in love riding on a motorcycle on this beautiful day.
Yes. You know what? You're probably right about that. But, you know, like the Damon Lindelof in me wants to know like what exactly that was and who they were
who
and why
were
they were driving and why they made it such a big point to show them next to Frank.
Point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I try.
I'm proud of you.
I give it my best shot.
So we're going to continue with Frank for a little bit.
Yes, let's keep
going. He's going up to the stones and hearts broke around the world right now, my mm-hmm. friend, because you're seeing poor Frank go up there and he is just, he's brokenhearted. I mean, remember, he was up here with Claire. This is where they got to see the whole little dance go on.
Correct.
And he's walking around. He's checking out the stone. He's not even walking. He's like kind of jogging up the hill as if, all right, I'm going to hope. Let's just see if this happens. And
yeah, can you imagine the desperation in his mind? He's just like, he has no other shot at anything other than just, what the hell? Let's just go and figure it out, you know? And you hear the desperation in his voice as he's calling out for Claire's name. One of the things I didn't like, though, was that her shawl that she disappeared in uh-huh. was still at the stones. I feel like if there was that much investigation by these cops and there was that...
No, it was at the stones in her time.
No, I thought it was in his time.
No.
Are you sure?
Yes. She looks down and she sees her shawl.
Oh, okay.
And
all
right. He doesn't see it. She sees it because that was what she was in. Then she got up and she was just wearing her little white dress.
All right. I understand what you're saying now.
But
I gotcha.
When he's saying her name and she can hear him.
Yeah. Now, does she hear him? That's
the
thing.
And then she says his name and he acts like he can hear her.
Yeah. But like, is this something that the show is like messing with you? You know, it wouldn't fit the style of the show to mess with you. It would be counterintuitive to this style show to mess with you. So do you really think they heard each other?
What do you mean
other?
Mess? Meaning that they were faking that they couldn't hear
yeah,
each other
like,
after
I remember,
all?
I remember as we were watching it, granted I was a few scotches in, I remember hearing birds, like, you know, squawking as she was saying, Frank, Frank, you know, birds were squawking on his end. And, you know, there are, you know, Scotsmen, trying to come after Claire in her time. And, you know, British soldiers are right there, as we find out. Maybe they're calling her name.
But it was Frank's voice. It was Frank's voice and it was Claire's voice. And I'm going to believe that they could hear each other. That whole area, it wasn't just that one stone. It's that whole area is very magical and very special.
Yes.
And these two people love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there. And they're calling for one another.
Now, does that speak more to their connection as a married couple than it does about the stones? Because not every person can go through those stones.
Correct.
And not every person goes through the same exact time. It's not like a time portal. It's not like a wormhole when you're on one end and it spits you out onto the other end. It's different for every person. So does that say something about their marriage? That their marriage and their love is so strong that it can connect them through time and space?
I don't know.
You know?
That's deep.
Of course it's deep. It's me. What do you think? They don't pay me the big bucks for nothing.
Oh, then Frank just leaves. He leaves and he is so sad.
He's dejected.
I literally was so heartbroken for Frank in this episode.
Me too. And I'm so glad that they gave us Frank in this episode. Because, you know, after the wedding, in that great kind of illustrious feeling of love and sex and learning about the Fraser family and Claire is all happy and they're having wild orgasmic sex. But then you realize she still has another guy on the back end over here. And he does face these consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he does face the fact that his wife is now missing. Where did she go? Why is she missing? He has to deal with the real world problem. So from what I've heard, what I've gathered on Twitter, none of this stuff with Frank actually happened in the book.
No.
Like,
as I said, it's all from Claire's perspectives, from her point of view. So we didn't know what Frank was doing at this point.
Which is great
because you didn't get to feel Frank's pain. You know, we got to see Jamie's pain and Jamie's stuff because we saw Jamie through Claire's eyes. But we had no idea what Frank might have gone through. And this was brilliant because it makes the love triangle a triangle
mm-hmm.
and not just like
line. It's not the Jamie show.
Yeah.
It's not the Jamie train constantly. You actually have someone else to worry about.
And you need it, because if you're sitting there and you're like, God, Frank's boring, he stinks, Jamie's awesome, then why would Claire try to go back to Craig Nadeau? You need to see this. You need to see Frank and what a wonderful poor little guy he is and how sad he is. And you understand that Claire does want to get back to him. She wants to get back to her time.
I'm so glad that we got this perspective, because I don't want it to be all just Jamie train all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you something. I wish we had spent more time with Frank. In fact, you know, Ron Moore has made it a specific choice to make this show his own. He's thrown us off a little bit when Claire was confessing to Mrs. Fitz, and we had a whole litany of things that we've already talked about, so I don't need to go over it right now. What he should have done was made this entire episode about Frank, in my opinion. He should have done it, because then what would have happened was we actually got a chance to see Frank, and you got a chance to feel for him. And you kind of did for this episode, but it would have been an unbelievable choice to just focus on him and then maybe give you a little bit of a Jamie and Claire tease at the end. Mm-hmm. But I think if you stuck with Frank this whole time, it would have been a cool choice.
It would have. There's things in this episode that happened that needed to happen so that Claire would go away.
Well, because to be honest, you know, we haven't given our overall opinions of the show of the episode so far, but I'm going to do it right now. To be honest, I was a little underwhelmed by this episode.
Oh my God! See, I loved it.
No, I feel like the show didn't get real until the Frank scene with Claire at the Stones. Everything else before that was just kind of a bunch of crap to me.
Wow.
Like, it was stuff. Like, it was good. It was well shot, well directed. I liked it, but it was a bunch of stuff. And I could do without it. I'm not going to lie. So give me something that I want, that I care about, that I want to watch.
But that's what Frank was.
Exactly. So that's
why
I want
you to...
So
you wanted even more. Because I felt like Frank was half the episode.
No, he was. He was, but it... The problem that the episode suffered from was that it kept bringing you back and forth. Like, you had those fade to blacks a lot, mm-hmm. and it felt disjointed to me. In no way was the story between Frank and Claire, was it related in any way, other than when they met up at the Stones. And you could say, oh, well, you know, Claire wouldn't end up at the Stones because she needed to be raped in order to get in shock, in order to be like, oh my God, I have to go back to...
She wasn't raped. She was nearly raped.
And she wouldn't have been able to kill the guy unless she was trained by Rupert and everybody in how to do the little
knife. It was
Murtaugh.
It
was Rupert.
It was Angus.
Was it... Oh, what, are you sure? I think it was Rupert.
I remember Rupert making the joke about the knife not being long enough. Yeah.
That's what she said
I
joke
think
ever
was
created.
Angus was the one.
Well,
who
whoever it was,
her.
Whoever it was, okay.
It was Angus.
Well, yeah, oh, well, then she needed to learn how to kill that guy. And they needed to set up Horrocks for this season going forward. But a lot of it was useless. It was just kind of there to move the story along so that she could go to the rocks. And then eventually be put in the same room as BJR. Mm-hmm. And my contention is that none of that had to happen. What they needed to do was they needed to have the Scots and Claire be together walking through the Highlands, and eventually they could have just ended up upon Craig Nadeau, just like how it happened. And so you sit there and say, okay, well, if she wasn't in shock, she wouldn't have made the choice to go back to the 1940s and touch the rocks. I disagree. Because her whole intent this entire time is, I got to get back to Frank. Even though she got married, even though she's banging Jamie, she still has that in the back of her mind. She's got the two rings on her fingers. It's ever present.
But it wasn't ever present. And that's what the shock was.
But
it wasn't.
But are you telling me that if you didn't see those rocks and you didn't see your ultimate goal, that wouldn't knock some sense back into you and be like, oh my God, those are the rocks. This is what I was coming here for.
I'm just going to let you slide because you're not a book reader. I'll forgive you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm just saying, like, it seems redundant. And then also, the two near rape scenes, I felt like the first rape scene took a lot away from the BJR near rape scene. It would have been much more poignant to me had the first one not happened. It would have been a lot more dangerous to me. Because I'd be like, oh, okay, here she's trying to get raped again. Like, that's how I felt.
Whatever. I disagree. But that's because I read the books. And this was like 8 chapters in the book.
Well, that's another thing, too. Because they had so much to tell.
And maybe that's it. Maybe there was just so much to tell that they squished it and it felt uncomfortable for you.
As a show watcher. And that's why I'm saying they should have just stuck with Frank and then gave us a teaser about Jamie and Claire at the end of the episode. Or stick with Jamie and Claire and give us a teaser about Frank. Either way, make a choice. Don't give me like this kind of compromised piece of art, which was good, but it wasn't great. And the show has built this up as, oh, it's a finale. And as a finale, you're expecting something that's extraordinary. Every finale is like that for the most part. But this is not a finale. It's just the mid-season point. You know what I mean? So I think the show kind of damned itself a little bit.
Yeah.
It's trying to make something bigger out of something that it's really not. It's only the mid-season part. So because of that, it kind of shot itself in the foot.
Right. Well, we'll agree to disagree. Because I actually really liked this episode.
All right. Tell me why.
Because we got so much out of Claire. She's in this dream world. She is hanging out with Jamie and they're talking about how what they have is very special and unique. And then she's getting wedding gifts, a dragonfly in amber. And Jamie's telling her that she's the Lady of Lallybroch. And
yeah.
You know, just a lot's going on. And then she's learning how to fight. You know, she's getting used to this time and place. And then there's Frank. And I just, my heart beat for Frank so much in this episode. I loved this episode. I loved it. Loved it.
I thought it was good. But I thought the wedding and then even more, the Garrison Commander were far superior episodes.
All right. Well, I feel like you're being a bit of a Debbie Downer right now.
We need the Debbie Downer song.
Yeah, we do. Tell me what you liked about this episode, because as I said, I loved it.
Okay, I did like it. I did enjoy watching it. Of course. I mean, wow, how could you not? It's Outlander, right? It's like, I'd say, you know, 50% Outlander is better than 100% most of the NCISs and SVUs and CTU and any other freaking acronym you can think of on network TV. So yes, it was good. I enjoyed it. What I did like, it was beautifully shot. I mean, it was stunningly shot. And I did love the sequence when they were both running up to the stones. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, breathtaking. My heart was beating. And then he's sitting there calling her name out, whether or not he heard or she heard it. In the end, it doesn't really matter. They portrayed it as though they did hear each other. So I'm willing to accept that. And they're calling each other's names. And you just feel the tension, the love, the care, the, oh my God, I'm right here. They're within fingertips. And you see Claire run up to the rocks and black. You know, and I thought that was an awesome choice. Mm-hmm. Because again, you know that she's not going to get back together with Frank right away. You know that she's not going to get back to 1945, because if it happened, there'd be no more show. Mm-hmm. Immediately, right?
That'd be a very interesting mid-season finale for sure.
I know. That would have been a bold choice too. That would have been a really cool choice if they
book readers would have rioted in the streets if Claire was suddenly back with Frank in time.
And I think that would have been a really cool choice if like maybe Frank was thrust into this time somehow, or maybe if they kind of faked you out a little bit at the end.
Yeah, if they almost stopped it right as she was walking up to it and it went to black there.
Yeah, and that's why I say they could have done a tease at the end. That would have been like, holy crap. Did that just happen, right? Mm-hmm. That would have been a momentous occasion for this show.
For those who haven't read the book, I agree. I think that would have been a much more dramatic way to end it.
Yeah.
But there's a huge part of the plot that needs to happen. Well, you see, and now it's bringing back BJR.
Yeah, well, see, now this is the fine line that Ron Moore has to tread here, because he does have all these book readers. Mm-hmm. And he's got to make them happy. That's his base. And he's got his show, and he's got to make it his own show, right? So what does he do? and this is, I think, the result of what happened. He had a compromise and said, look, I got to tell Frank's story. Because in the book, nobody cares about Frank. Nobody wants to root for him because they're so enthralled with Jamie in the book. So in the show, I'm making this a significant love triangle. I'm going to give you some background on Frank. And he succeeded very well on that. It was a phenomenal job by him. I mean, seeing Frank's heartbreak when he's talking to the police officer, right? You just knew, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so then I loved that. I did absolutely love the interaction between Jamie and Claire.
Really?
I did. I really did.
Which one? All of it?
It was just all awesome. No, it was...
Because there was a lot, and it was a lot of different emotions.
Yeah, you know what I would say my favorite interaction was?
Which one?
Was when he was saying that he promised to take care of her, and he...
Messed up?
He screwed up.
Okay, so the last scene together where they're riding the horses.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I liked that a lot, and I liked that a lot because it was real. Mm-hmm. And it remember how I loved the wedding and the interactions between Claire and Jamie because it was real.
Yeah.
You know, the awkward sex and like him saying, her saying, you're crushing me and all that stuff. It was real. And that was real too. It mm-hmm. wasn't just like, oh, we're star-crossed lovers and we're going to be amazing together and happy times and blah, blah, blah.
Well, let's dissect the Jamie and Claire scenes.
Okay, let's do that.
We took our time with Frank.
Yep.
And poor Frank. I mean, I just loved how the first bit flashed and switched over to Claire and Jamie because he's, of course, being told that his wife is with another man. And he's like, no, she's not. Boom. There she is caressing Jamie's hand. And he's asking her if this attraction between the two of them is normal. And she says no. That, you know, what we have is very different. So, oops, sorry, Frank. Bad timing for you.
Oops.
Love the looks that these two give each other. Mm-hmm. Jamie and Claire. God, Sam and Katrina, they're just doing an amazing job.
They have a lot more chemistry than Katrina and Tobias. I will say that.
Yes.
They have a lot more chemistry. It's a lot more believable. I mean, the relationship that they're portraying is one of young love. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in their eyes. And with Claire and Frank, it's a love that has been tainted a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't want to say tainted. It's been...
Weathered.
There you go.
Weathered is a good word.
Much better word. It's been weathered. And you see that in their interaction, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I just need to note that Jamie and Claire, when they were sitting on this hillside having this discussion, they were eating cheese again. God, they have got... I bet you they've been taking rent and cheese.
Dude, they are literally keeping the cheese guy in business.
Honestly, I want to jump on their bandwagon. Goodness me. And so all of a sudden, an arrow swooshes on by, and Jamie looks at the arrow and starts laughing. And Claire's like, is this a friend of yours? Yes, it's Hugh Monroe, a guy without a tongue and who has oil-burned legs. And we speak in a really cool sign language that we've made up.
It reminded me of Timmy and Lassie. Like, what, Lassie? The little Johnny fell down the well and we have to go get him?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, okay.
Because I'm wondering, was this sign language something that a lot of people knew? Or, you know, how, I mean, a lot of his movements seemed to be pretty much the same. And so, I was really amazed with their interaction. They did a good job.
All right. And when this guy appeared on the screen, Twitter freaked out. By the way, they freaked out. All you book readers were like,
oh my God, it's you.
Ants in your pants. Is it really a big deal, this guy? Or is he just kind of like a, eh?
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay, all right. You know what? That's actually...
The proper thing for me to do. I know.
That's actually the exact right thing for you to
the
do.
The present
do not
that
tell
he
me.
Gives Claire, I'll tell you this, is the name of the second book in the series,
oh,
Dragonfly.
So that's
Namber.
Foreboding.
Yeah, so that was a pretty cool thing that everyone got to say.
Oh, you know when Twitter also freaked out too?
When?
Was when that little kid showed up.
Oh, yes.
Is this kid like someone important? No, don't answer that.
I'm not going to answer that.
Okay, and this is the problem with live tweeting because I'm live tweeting and I see all the reactions and it's like, okay, now it's putting things in my brain, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, what do I do now? I'm trying to avoid these spoilers at all costs.
You just keep on going. And everyone knows to keep it spoiler-free, at least with us.
So I hope so.
So the cool thing about Hugh is he's coming to tell Jamie that there is a gentleman who is a redcoat deserter
yep.
who can hopefully break the news to everyone that Jamie is innocent. This guy says that he actually saw the person who did commit the murder, and he will be able to prove that Jamie's innocent so Jamie can go home.
Yep.
So that's the news that Hugh brings, and Jamie tells Claire, he's like, listen, this would be awesome. I'd be able to bring you home, show you off to my family.
Yeah, he jumps on it immediately. Yes. And he says,
I don't know if I can trust him. I don't know if I can trust this guy, but it's worth a shot. I mean, we've heard multiple times Jamie has to literally hide, you know, especially because he has red hair. He can't be seen. And he can't be seen in his own family colors. He can't even go home. My goodness. So it's just, Jamie has a spark of hope.
And Claire, if she's going to end up staying in Scotland in this time period, do you think she deserves that bit of hope?
Yeah.
You think so?
God, I don't want to go back to Castle Leah.
No. I don't want to go back there either.
So, of course, she wants her own home.
No, but like, do you think she deserves it? Like, as a character, do you think she
deserves hope that her husband will be innocent?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because, you know, she is a lady that, yes, she is stuck in 1743, but she is indeed married still.
Yeah, and I think she would like an easier life. Nobody wants to be living on
the run.
Yeah,
but she's married to Frank, and now all of a sudden she's married to this guy, too.
Poor Claire doesn't know which way's up.
She just needs to keep getting Sassenach wasted.
Gosh. Well, then they're back and telling stories about water horses, and Jamie and Claire have some more passionate kissing, and he gives her a knife all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says the horses are being startled.
And this was a great scene. I think this is one of my other favorite scenes. It wasn't necessarily... totally.
You had to actively be watching it. If you were someone who was live tweeting and not looking at the screen, you would have totally missed
it. And then this is when the show, and again, it wasn't necessary to the story overall necessarily for the entire episode, but this is when the show makes you meet it halfway a little bit. And I know I keep saying that all the time, but it's important to me. They're not telling you exactly what's happening, but you're seeing the horses stir. You see Rupert, like, he's telling the story, and his inflection doesn't change one bit. And you hear that constant drolling of the story as everybody's kind of preparing, and you can
tell
that
they're moving in little minute ways, or they're grabbing their weapon.
No one's panicking.
Nope.
And you can tell that this has been done multiple times. They know exactly what they're doing, how they're going to do it, when they're going to do it. They're just waiting for the right time.
Well, and it's smart. Think about it. You are known around the countryside. You're collecting rent. You have a lot of money, obviously a lot of cheese, and, you know, some livestock. So you're an easy target for people to want to go after.
Mm-hmm.
But little did they know, you don't mess with Clan McKenzie, because you're going to get your butt beat. So Jamie sends Claire, and he says, go run towards that little nook over there.
Mm-hmm.
When I tell you to go, and pretty much like 2 seconds later,
boom,
go Claire.
They gotta go.
And she jumps on in, and in come these ragamuffins trying to steal stuff, and they do steal stuff.
Yeah. And you know, whatever, the stuff is stolen, but what I took out of this most was how they beat these guys back. They did their job.
Yeah, well,
they,
thanks to Ned and his amazing shooting skills,
Ned,
that surprised
Billy,
him.
Ned Billy the Kid Gowan over here. Like, there was a couple of natural reactions to what happened. When Ned was like, did you just see what I did?
Yeah.
If that was one pace, that was 20 or whatever the heck it was. Like, he was legitimately shocked and surprised and totally geeked out over the fact that he just shot and killed this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody kind of acknowledged that, like, holy, oh my God, like, yeah, you did. That's awesome. And they all started laughing about it. And whether or not that's a nervous laughter or one of those adrenaline type laughters,
yes,
it doesn't really matter. You could just tell that this is important, but they have this sense of humor about it, and it gave a lot of perspective to their characters. Mm-hmm. And that this is just a regular day occurrence. They're moving on. They are living their lives out in the wild.
I'm really glad it was Ned.
I was glad it was Ned too, because he was the one who was saying, I wanted adventure and everything. And anytime there was a fight, like, remember the fight when they were protecting Claire's, like, her honor, mm-hmm, and they were fighting in the bar. You know, Ned was off in the side with Claire. He wasn't doing anything.
Yep.
And now here he is shooting some dude from 20 paces away, and he's all proud of it. I was proud for him, too. Why not?
Well, after this little fight scene, they come to realize that Claire has no clue what she's doing, and they should probably teach her how to use a weapon. So up comes Rupert to save the day and shows her where to strike, pretty much. And all the guys are standing around like, oh, yeah, yeah, way to go.
Nice. Yeah, that's
like
how you do
that.
It.
Yeah.
And they were all talking like this.
So just the little hidden dagger. And they tell her, like, some people keep it in their socks. And Ned says he keeps his in a private place. And then he hands her his.
Mm-hmm.
Ew, why did you hand Claire your groin knife? Like,
well,
I would have.
This is after he makes the first "that's what she said" joke.
Yes.
In the history of mankind.
Yes.
When he said it was too long and heavy for her. And I was like, oh, yeah, dude. Way to go. Way to be a pioneer.
And then you have Murtaugh saying, you know, that he thinks the only weapon that women should be using is poison.
Yeah. And what Dougal's like, yeah, it doesn't work very well in battle, though.
Well, and thank goodness they teach her this, because she puts that skill to use quite soon when she and Jamie decide to go off gallivanting in the woods.
Is that what you kids are calling it nowadays?
I guess so. But
because we call that banging in my town.
And they're just so wrapped up in each other. Talk about young love.
Yeah.
You know, just oblivious to the world, literally.
Jamie's taking it to Pound Town.
And then up come these two deserters of the Redcoats, and they're nasty.
And they try and take advantage of Claire. And you know what the funny thing is? They have Claire and they have Jamie in this precarious position, and Jamie is, not only is he not doing anything, but I think he's incapable of doing anything.
This is one thing I'll tell you about. In the book, it came off differently. In the book, Claire knew she had that little knife.
Yep.
And it was very clear between her and Jamie that he was almost giving her the nod, like, okay, you know what to do. You have your knife.
Yep.
And I didn't feel like that was communicated in this.
What do you think was being communicated?
Visually on screen.
Yep.
It was just like, oh my God, I don't know what to do.
And then she has this realization?
From Jamie, I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
In the book, it was very clear that Jamie was giving her the nod, like, you know what to do. You have the weapon on you. Kill this guy. It was like this silent eye thing. But in the show, I didn't get that.
You got Jamie being like, oh my God, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Which, I'm not really sure if I got that, but what I did get was Jamie was left a little helpless. Like, I don't know what I can do, but is, I don't think there's anything I can do.
Yeah. Yeah, but it wasn't, I mean, he did this little, very little thing with his eyes, and I don't know if it was him blinking, if that was supposed to be his nod,
like
to be
cops.
Like, do it, Claire.
Are you being mistreated? Yeah. Let me know by blinking twice.
Exactly. So I didn't get that, and that's why in this show, after this, I felt like Claire was mad and disappointed in Jamie,
Yeah. Even
more so.
But I don't think she has a right to be mad or disappointed in Jamie.
He didn't even say stop.
What do you mean?
He wasn't even verbally yelling at the guy.
So if he yelled at the guy, if he was like, hey, dude, stop trying to rape my girl,
I don't know.
You'd feel better about it?
I don't know. I mean, I've never been in this situation.
No.
And then we had, holy crap, blurry, like, Saving Private Ryan.
That was like Saving Private Ryan almost.
And of course, we're seeing it blurry because we're supposed to be feeling like Claire.
And you're supposed to be disoriented and disjointed and falling into that, you know, sense of shock.
I just
really
got so dizzy. I got dizzy. I got a little nauseous watching it.
It's funny because this show, you know, as well as it's written and as beautiful as it is, sometimes it makes these funny choices in its directing styles. Now, I know they're all different directors for the most part, but, you know, like Brian Kelly with the slow-mo in the shinty game, you know? And then we have that weird Brian Kelly shot of going down the stream as Dougal was about to ask Claire if she was a spy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we have this little interaction here where it's like this blurry and
almost like slow motion choppy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it felt like it belonged like in a Bourne movie, or it felt like it belonged, you know, in a movie by Peter Berg or someone like that. It was like shaky cam, and it's not like this show to have that.
No, so it made me a little nauseous. But
it was
maybe
good,
that
though.
Was I mean, it. Claire was probably nauseous at that point.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's what they were trying to accomplish, and I think they did a good job in at least conveying that emotion visually. Again, meeting you halfway. Don't tell me, show me. I think that was great.
And then the next time we see Claire and Jamie, he's apologizing and he's saying, I didn't even do anything. And she's like, it's all right. I'm in shock. Oh my God, I'm freezing. He realizes she's freezing. Her poor shirt is still open. If she's cold, tie up her bloody shirt.
Well, I think she's free. Like, she was just shaking. She was just shivering because she was in shock.
Yes.
Which was something good. This is when a voiceover is necessary because she cannot say out loud, and you really cannot portray visually what she's thinking, which is, I'm in shock, and yeah, the shock sucks, but what sucks more is if I say something stupid, like, hey, guess what? I'm from the future, and I shouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. That, to me, was a very perfect time to use the voice.
I agree. She says, you know, she suddenly thought about her parents and men that she'd see die, and you know exactly, had any of these words come out, she would have outed herself. Mm-hmm. She was just, it was like someone was going with a remote control flicking through the channels on Claire's brain at that moment.
Exactly. And this is when the show starts to get good. Mm-hmm. For me, this is when it starts to happen, because now you have a conflict between Jamie and Claire that makes sense, right? Yeah. She's pissed off at him for letting her down. And now she's in shock, and she's putting her, and she is now in sensitive territory. Is she going to come out with this stuff? And then we find her realizing, holy crap, I am right near Craig Nadune.
Yeah, well, that's when Jamie leaves her to go check out this guy, and he needs his whole crew because he doesn't believe him. And he says, don't worry, I'm going to leave you with Willie. And she's like, I can obviously handle myself. I proved that earlier, by the way. Dig, Jamie.
Yeah, that's true.
I got this.
And he makes her promise, and she kind of gives him this promise, but it wasn't, I couldn't tell if it was because she was in like this shock mode or whatever, but she kind of like blew him off a little bit. But then she ends up saying, well, I wasn't mad at him. I was mad at the fact that
I think she was both.
I think she probably was, but she's a girl. I mean, that's what girls, they think like that sometimes.
And poor Willie goes and does his business.
And she's like, go over there, 50 yards away from me.
Stinky. Okay, so she goes. We've already gone over the whole story about her going up to Craig Nadune. All right, now she's going to Fort William.
This was a great shot. A great shot with her in the little wagon there, right? And do you think the officers or the people that catch her, do they know who she is?
No.
No, they don't. You don't think so? Okay.
And it's so good that she had that time, because she starts to remember the Duke of Sandringham and how Frank had said way back when, oh, you know, Black Jack Randall, he was such a bad dude. Like, he got away with a lot of stuff that really would have been frowned upon. But I think some rich guy was taking care of business, so no one would question. I think that rich guy was Duke of Sandringham. So Claire remembers this conversation. Mind you, none of it is verified, but she thinks, at least I have something.
Yeah, she has something. And I will give the show credit in this occasion. Now is it all convenient that they talked about all this crap? And you know, like, is it convenient that all of a sudden she had this training to stab people and all of this stuff? Yes, it is a little convenient. Once again,
this episode was like 8 chapters worth.
Yeah, so is it convenient? Let's be honest here. Yes, it is. It's just, oh, hey, here's how to stab somebody, and 2 minutes later, you're going to be in a situation where you need to stab somebody. That, to me, is convenient.
But when you only have an hour.
I know, but let me finish this. My thought about this is this. I give the show credit for all the exposition that it had done in the pilot and in the second episode. We were thinking back to Frank and dealing and going through all the history lessons. And me, as a history geek, I appreciate that. I love that. But as a regular show watcher, you know, all the history lessons that Frank is providing, it's like dragging the show down. But what the show did was is that it brought it back and made it relevant. You know, before you're talking about Sandringham, I mean, like, oh, who the hell is this guy? Like, why do I care about him? And now you recognize why they brought it up in the first place. Mm-hmm. Because it's actually useful information for what's going to happen in the mid-season finale. And I have to give Ron Moore credit for making those scenes not just filler, but actual necessary plot points.
Yeah.
And which is great. it has nothing to do with necessarily with character development, but it does further the plot.
So before Claire knows it, she's inside the room with BJR, who congratulates her on her recent marriage.
And you can just sense him, like the hatred and like.
And he does this gross thing where he's like, "I notice you're still wearing your old wedding ring," and he like sticks his tongue in between his teeth.
Yeah. Oh God.
And does this little like rubbing of his teeth with his tongue, like just something that skeevy, gross people do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just questioning her. And then she goes, "Oh, it's sentimental." And he says, "I doubt you have a sentimental bone in your body." God.
Oh,
but
man.
He asks the question that I ask. Why does Dougal McKenzie want to keep her safe?
Yeah. And like we talked about this in the last Outlandish Theory of the Week, which is I think Dougal planned Claire to be married to Jaime so that he weakens Jaime's position in Castle Leok.
But, of course, BJR sees it as Dougal did it because Claire knows too much.
Yeah, and she does know too much, by the way. She
does. Maybe it's a mixed bag for Dougal.
It's a little bit of both, but he could have chosen anybody for Claire. He could have chosen Angus. Mm-hmm. He could have chosen Rupert. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, plot-wise, you're not going to have Rupert be the main character. Jaime is the main character. He's the good-looking guy, so the story demands that. But, at least within the context of the show, within the politics of the show, Dougal chose Jaime for a very specific reason, in my opinion, and that is to weaken Jamie's position. Mm-hmm. And she does know a lot, so it's probably a little bit of both happening at the same time. And then I'm brought immediately back to the garrison commander.
Oh God! It was you could have thought it was the same scene.
Could have.
Except Claire's wearing a different dress, and it's a different dress than she was wearing in the previous day.
Yep.
How many dresses does she bring with her? I would have thought I would have just had one dress for the road.
But this is when you realize that Blackjack is a dangerous dude. And you were happy she got out. She got out by the skin of her teeth in the garrison commander. Mm-hmm. Right? She was getting kicked until Dougal showed up. And now you realize there ain't nobody there to rescue
her. No. And he says, "This is the third time we've met, and I fully intend, by any means necessary, to discover both your true nature and the secrets that you hold."
Damn straight. And
Jack Bauer time.
Yeah, this is when Jack Bauer's coming through. And she is going to get tortured. And you know what? She could have.
She could have. And then she drops the Duke of Sandringham bomb.
Yeah, but even then, right? Like, this is really dangerous territory for Claire. Yes, we know that she's not going to go back to Frank. We know that Jaime is they're having a problem. What we don't know as a show watcher is what is going to happen with BJR here. Mm-hmm. Is he really gonna cut her nipple off?
Oh, you know what he really does do is he spits out his wine. He spits out his wine. Another oh my God moment.
Right? I know. So this is a real thing of danger. And I give credit to Claire for breaking out the Duke of Sandringham thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she was smart enough and quick enough
power
to think
move.
Of
and then she just commands the room. She's like, "Oh, I hope that wine doesn't stain." And he tries to clean it up and tries to tie it. And she even goes and tries to tie it for him.
And this was great because it was almost like tightening the noose on his neck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was tightening the pressure on him.
And she was basically saying, "Don't question me. We're employed by the same guy."
Great.
And he is going to be so upset when he hears that you've interfered. So she's basically telling him, "I'm a spy for the Duke of Sandringham.
So stop." And if I have to go back there and tell him, he's going to be very disappointed. Mm-hmm. in the amount of money that he's spent to keep me where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when the show is at its most brilliant, in my opinion. She's talking with BJR. She's wrapping the thing around his neck. He's a little on edge. And then all of a sudden, it shifts. And it shows you the shift. And he says, "Oh, well, you realize that, you know, if you're working for the Duke of Sandringham, you're working for his wife."
God, if Claire and BJR could play poker together, the game would be tied. Because she's calling his bluff. And now he's doing it. He's playing something dangerous, too. She could have been employed. And then he throws his Duchess thing in. And she could have been like, "There is no Duchess. And
well, you see,
you're
like,
a fool for questioning me."
Yeah.
"And I'm going to let the Duke know."
Well, that's what she should have done. Of course, she doesn't. She says, "Oh, yeah, well, that's what we're talking about, right?" You know, she tries to play it off like she knows. The problem that she's got is that he loses nothing by making up a story. Mm-hmm. He loses nothing. What? Let's just say, for the sake of argument, that she was working for the Duke of Sandringham. What's she gonna do? Go tell him? BJR lied to me. What the hell does he care?
Well, she couldn't do anything about it. What was she gonna do?
What she needed to do was say, "No, I don't know anything about the Duchess. I've been working for the Duke," and he could say, "Well, you know that the I work for the wife. Well, that's great, but I work for the Duke." And that's how she could have handled it. That's how she should have handled it. And that's when she gets herself into trouble, like every other time on this planet, when she just talks too much.
It's that wine. It's that wine and whiskey. She just needs to start saying no, thank you. One of the things that I love BJR Tobias does is he does this where he touches his head as if he has a headache or he's just thinking a really terrible thought.
Yeah.
You know?
And what's he thinking? Is he thinking like, what am I going to do to this girl? Because I know I got her now. Mm-hmm. I know I got her. And he's like trying to calm himself down. And he's trying to like gather his thoughts and gather that malevolence and just be like.
And he catches her.
Oh, I'm going to catch you, you mother. You know, like, oh, it was brilliant. I cannot thrust any more praise onto Tobias Menzies. I was so skeptical at the beginning of the season of his casting, because mm-hmm. he's always been a dink in any role that I've ever seen him in. Even like in the James Bond movies, he's in that too. He's always kind of like this nerd boy, but he is an absolute revelation in this show. Really? I mean, I go back and forth between he and the Jason Isaacs character in The Patriot on which British dink I like better, you know, like who was worse and who was more like invigorating. And I go back and forth and... I think I'm coming down on the side of Tobias Menzies on this.
I would hope so, because he is brilliant. And we get to see a lot more of him than just one movie. So
yeah, it's true.
He's going to win. So, well, Corporal Hawkins comes in and Corporal Hawkins doesn't get to save Claire.
Is this the guy that kicked her last time too?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Yes. All right. Yep.
And BJR is just like, back it up. I'm going to take out my rope and I'm going to cut off this girl's shirt and I'm going to torture her. And he lays around on his desk and it doesn't look like he was about to snip off her nipple.
And like, that was dangerous. Like, that's something that he would do.
With her own knife, because he found her knife.
Exactly. And like, it was just so, it was, invasive. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There was one of those things, like, you don't, it'd be one thing if he did it around her neck or whatever, or he had it like, you know, like on her stomach or whatever, but to have the knife at her nipple.
But it's, you know what it was, she went over the line. He already didn't like her. He already said, I'm gonna pretty much torture you to figure out what's going on. But she hit a nerve when she said the Duke.
Oh yeah. And you could tell that she made him uneasy.
Well, he doesn't
and
want
nobody
her going
makes
around.
Him uneasy.
He doesn't want her going around saying anything to anyone.
Yep.
Honestly.
And she's given herself more trouble specifically because of that, right?
Yes. Yes.
She's made herself that much more dangerous to him. Mm-hmm. So she played her cards, which was great, but the cards, they folded on her really quick, because now this guy has got it in for her real good. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had it in for her good because he wanted to figure out who she was and what she was doing and what kind of information she knew. But now she's showing up and saying, hey, I know the Duke of Sandringham. I know all about him. And nobody is supposed to know about that.
No.
So now she's even more dangerous to him, right? And then we have the nipple thing, right? Which again, it's just so personal. It's like in my personal bubble, you know? It's in my personal space. Don't get in my nipple space. Don't touch the nipple space. Only
no,
Jamie can.
No. Well, speaking of Jamie, he jumps in the window, and I thank you to take your hands off my wife. BJR looks at him like another OMG. He says, good God.
And he laughs.
Yes.
And this was, oh, God. If I could have an entire season of just Tobias Menzies and Claire and Jamie, their interactions, mm-hmm. I would be the happiest man on the planet.
Well,
because, all right. Well, you know what? don't say nothing, because I'm not even going to look at you, because I don't even want to see your face.
Okay.
Ultimately, all right, let me say a couple of things before I get into the window scene. We have that scene with BJR in the rope, in like the noose, and it was poetic. It almost rhymed in a way, in that, you know, you have Claire tying the thing around his neck like a noose. Mm-hmm. And then he has the rope and he's wrapping it around his hand. And at the time I'm thinking, what the hell is he going to do? Is he just going to like beat the hell out of her?
That's what I thought.
And, or is he going to hang her? Or is he just going to torture the heck, is he going to torture the heck out of her and like just strangle her to death? Like, what's he going to do? And then he just goes into that invasive, like, I'm gonna rape you again. Mm-hmm. And this time he meant it. Mm-hmm. This time he was like, I'm going to take what I want and I'm going to get it. And
yeah,
it'd be no problem. But then we have Jamie coming to save the day, right? And he jumps up into the window. First of all, I don't know how high this little office is. Like, did Jamie climb up a window, like climb up the wall here? And how did Jamie find her? And how did he know where she was? How did he know which window it was in?
Well, she screamed. She said, help anybody.
Yeah, that's true. And the great thing was, BJR didn't even have a reaction to it.
No.
Didn't even wince.
That probably happens to him once a day at Fort William. Honestly.
I wonder how many nipples he has cut off.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about it. I'm getting nauseous thinking about it. Ugh. Anyway, so that was the episode.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm in love with how the cliffhanger happened, because it seemed like almost too fictiony for me.
Well, it needed you to understand that there's deeper conflict between BJR and Jamie. For BJR to laugh like that,
yeah,
there's much more. So I think that's what you need to leave with. Yes, we are very concerned about Claire getting home to Frank.
Yes.
And yes, the interactions between Blackjack Randall and Claire are, oh my God, they are intense to say the least. But the true source of this conflict is between Blackjack Randall and Jamie.
Okay.
And you need to be left with that. You need to understand the villain and the hero.
Okay. Because lest we forget, Blackjack Randall tortured the hell out of Jamie and lashed him 200 times.
And thought it was a thing of beauty. There was something very special to him.
Exactly.
When
about this kid.
He lashed out when he pretty much nearly killed Jamie.
So you have Claire, who is, as we've already discovered, now infinitely more dangerous to BJR. And then she's married to Jamie, the kid that he almost killed. And the thing that he remembers back to fondly, by the way. And that's why he laughs. And that's the way I interpreted it, at least. Like, holy crap, I can't believe this is happening. Mm-hmm. I wonder, I mean, it was a cool little cliffhanger for the show. It seemed, again, a little convenient that Jamie just figured out where they were. Mm-hmm. I personally would have liked the artistic choice of it fading to black when Claire touches the rocks and getting all of this next season, or maybe somehow teasing it some way. But that's when it got real, when they were about to touch the rocks, and then they get you into BJR, you know, like, because she's so close to touching Frank. And instead of Frank, what does she get? She gets BJR. And that, to me, essentially, is Frank.
Yeah.
That's the juxtaposition that we're finding. That's the thing that we're seeing. And the show made it a point to give you that juxtaposition, because when Frank was beating the heck out of those guys with the blackjack, can you be any more on the nose, any more heavy-handed? You see him becoming part of his ancestor. Mm.
Breaks my heart.
It does break my heart a little bit too. It breaks my heart for Frank. Mm-hmm. Because I do think he's a good guy. Yeah, he's got some bad freaking blood. I mean, there's no way around it. But he does truly care about Claire. The guy's in the Highlands for 6 weeks after their vacation, trying to spend money and interviews and getting his wife back. He's not only is he doing it, he's doing it so often, he's pissing off all these cops. The guy gets so pissed off, he's like, oh, this is the day I gotta tell him, dude. And he takes a thing of whiskey in his teacup.
Yes.
Right?
Oh.
So you know that he has not given up. He has been persistent. Again, that was a great way of the show showing you how persistent Frank has been.
And this is why I love this episode. It gave you everything you needed. It reinvigorated Frank and Claire's relationship, yep, which you needed a big jump start there. Mm-hmm. It made you hate BJR even more, as if that was even possible, but it is. And it also reminded you about BJR and Jamie.
Correct.
And you need all of those to carry you over to the forever distance of April 4th when the second half of season one returns.
Let me ask you this, just as the show, don't tell me in the book, and this may be a hard question for you to answer. In the show alone, do you think we are now done with Frank? Like, do you think his story has been told? Is he going to give up on Claire, or is he?
No.
No, you don't think we're done with him?
I don't. I think that the directors have really liked using Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a while longer, we need to keep seeing the things that are alike and different about Frank and BJR. I think Frank is a highlighter to BJR to show how terrible he is.
Yes, he's a mirror.
Yes.
He is definitely a mirror.
But a different mirror, you know, like the nice version, like a Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. But he is a reflection of his ancestor.
Yeah.
And the reflection, albeit a little changed, is still a reflection nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. That's why Frank is so important, because you need to see how evil BJR is to everybody else.
I agree.
So let me before everybody decides to kill me and lynch me up here. I enjoyed this episode. I did.
Good.
I enjoyed it. I loved watching it, getting Sassenach wasted and tweeting, live tweeting with all you guys. It was a fun episode to watch. I think they could have made some better choices to make it a better episode. At least within the context of the entire season.
Well, I loved it. I loved it so much. I just want to have the soundtrack already.
You know what the problem is? The Garrison Commander, I hold it so highly in regard that anything would have been a letdown, in my opinion. Anything. You know what I mean?
Well, that's an honest statement.
The wedding was great. There was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of things happening within the last two episodes. A lot of stuff happened. Could it have benefited from being longer? Probably. Could it have benefited from having like an emotional break in between? Yeah, probably. So that's why I say nothing would have compared to the Garrison Commander.
I just wish we didn't have to wait so bloody long.
I know,
I just really wish we could have all 16 episodes in a row. I mean, take off a holiday here or there. I get it. But gosh, they're just making us wait forever. Anyway.
You want to get to listener feedback?
I think that would be fantastic.
All right, let's do it. All right, from the emails, Fern writes in. She says, okay, Blake, I was thinking about your feelings about supporting Frank, even though you have turned favorable towards Jamie lately, which I have, by the way. I think you and many men might be able to identify more with Frank in his situation. Why? Well, he is married and devoted to his wife, just like I am to you, my darling wife.
Yay.
And he is someone that guys can relate to more than... she puts Jamf, J-A-M-M-F.
That's Jamie...
Oh, Mackenzie Fraser. Okay, that's his
Jamie
initials.
Alexander, oh, Malcolm, Mackenzie Fraser.
Okay, I got you. All right, because I've been seeing that on Twitter. I'm like, what the
you
hell is Jamf?
I haven't known what that hashtag is. It's Jamie.
I thought it was like something like whatever. Jamf. Okay.
Oh my goodness.
And also, who would want their wife to disappear and end up with Jamie? Of course, Jamf. So time will tell the whole story when you can decide and let us know. At least by the end of season two. And she thought that they left the cliffhanger at a good point. Yes. I think I do side with Frank a little bit more because I am married. I have a beautiful wife with whom I go to sleep with every night.
Aww.
And she is there, and I have my son, and we are our own little fiefdom. We are our own little country unto ourselves, and I protect my constituents at all costs. So if my wife were to disappear all of a sudden for no reason, I would be freaked out. And that's why I think I feel for Frank. I think that's why I am Team Frank. That's it. Wow, you just blew my mind, Fern. Thank you so much.
Whoa.
All right, you want to get to Twitter?
All right. BamaBal47 said, I know this story like the back of my hand, yet I am wowed every week. I agree.
18th Century Last says, why are the books in a cage? Set them free.
What books?
The books, like the Outlander books, meaning like stop giving us things that the books don't do. Like the whole Frank stuff for this thing. Stop caging the books. Let them tell the story the books told.
Oh, I didn't understand that. I'm glad you clarified.
18th Century Lass, like I say, this is America. You got your own opinion, but you're wrong. They need to make the show their own.
Court 23, you're killing me with that cliffhanger, Smalls. Meaning, I think from
The Sandlot.
The Sandlot?
Yeah, of course.
You're killing me,
Smalls. That's why I included it in here, just specifically for the Sandlot, reference.
So they're saying that to Outlander.
Does everybody know that Benny the Jet is Mary's crush?
Yep.
Total crush.
Like, when I was a kid, so don't worry, I'm not like a pedophile.
No, you still kind of like him, don't you?
I think that his grown-up version is Jacoby Ellsbury, so he's my grown-up baseball crush.
Piece of garbage.
A Little Chat tweeted, very creepy to watch Frank and Blackjack overlapping personalities. Freaking me out. Makes me not want Claire to return to Frank. And Tribe Tobias tweeted, giving us Frank's side of the story has made for some excellent dramatic tension, plus more Tobias screen time, with the hashtag good call.
My Outlander tweets saying, Jamie carried Claire all the way up that hill. No wonder why he has such great thighs.
Ooh.
King of all men.
Says that she enjoyed everything, although I felt it would have benefited had it been 2 hours for the finale. It felt a little bit cramped, and I think you hit the nail on the head. Bree, like, you think that it would be better if it breathed a little bit,
yeah,
right?
You got to let that breathe. There's a lot of emotional tension happening after those two episodes, and you needed to let the show let it go, a little Let it go.
Good job.
You like that?
I do.
I was on tune, too. I was on key. I was. Give it to me. Tell me I was.
You were better than you normally are. I'll give you that.
But no, the show needs to let that stuff breathe a little bit. And I think she's right. Jill Z A says, my husband is forbidden to watch with me until he reads the books. That's wife code for, let me enjoy Jamie alone. This was a very close choice for our tweet of the week. It was so close. What a great tweet.
Erin O'Han says that she waited 20 years to see Outlander on television. That wait seems like nothing compared to the wait until April 4th for the second half of the season. Erin, we are right there with you. It feels like forever.
Mary-Kate Fitz-4 says, watching Outlander makes me want nothing more in life than a dirty, rugged Scotsman. Hashtag please. Do you agree with her? Do you really want a dirty, rugged hat like Scotsman?
I mean, you're dirty and you're rugged.
But I'm just from Boston.
Yeah.
it's like
you still have an accent. Yeah. So I guess I like kind of hit the jackpot just on the other side of the ocean.
I'm like 3/4, you know, like of the way.
If you had red hair, it would be like total jackpot. Anyway, Tara Kadal?
Sure, why not?
I'll just say it all at once. Tara Kadal got hooked on Outlander only to find that it has a mid-season finale and won't continue until April. I'm dying.
Hashtag just my luck.
ALM Parks 2012. I'm totally having an Outlander-themed viewing party for the start of the 2015 season. Costumes, food, men in kilts, the works. Who's in?
That's a great idea. I think we should do that.
Oh my God, we totally should. And, oh my God, speaking of kilts, I was at Whole Foods today shopping for pre-made carrot ginger soup because I don't know where my stick blender went. Anyway, so I was in the soup aisle and one of the guys working at Whole Foods restocking the soup shelves was wearing a kilt.
Really?
I almost took a picture.
And you should have.
I was like, I want to take a picture with him and be like, you're awesome.
You would have made his day.
I don't know.
You would have made his day.
I could have either made his day or totally weirded him out, because I do that sometimes. Like, I really have great intentions and then I really weird people out.
Like the time you freaked out Micah?
Oh my gosh, yes. I freaked out a podcast host that when I saw him, and he was like, you're scary. He didn't actually say that, but his face said it all. Anyway, sorry, once again, didn't mean to scare you. That Vision Girl tweeted, I don't like the parallels Outlander is drawing between Frank and BJR. It's like it's his birthright to be a sociopath. Ew, that is scary.
I don't know, that Vision Girl, it's America. Mary, what am I going to say?
It's America.
But you're wrong. Sorry. It makes those characters
so... when you say people are wrong.
But it makes those characters so much more layered. And
just say, in my personal opinion, like Miss South Carolina.
Hey, listen. It's America. You're entitled to your own opinion. But in my opinion, which obviously it's the most important because I'm the host of this show. Hey, you're wrong. It makes those characters that much more layered. I'm sorry. Joanne Smith says, needed a bit more emotional transition from the wedding night. Episode 107.5 was needed, perhaps. Otherwise, 108 served its purpose.
Hmm.
And you know, Joanne, I think you're right. We've already said it. It needed to breathe. On Facebook, Betty Lou Torres chimes in saying she loves our podcast. And when I get excited that my Boston accent really comes out a lot. Yeah, Betty Lou, you should hit me when I drink. It gets even worse. Anyway, she says she has some information to help explain that the confusing line that you've been running into, grind her corn.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it refers to a popular 17th, 18th century song called Maid Went to the Mill. And part of the lyrics to the song is when this lady went to a mill and she got her corn ground. And the lady in the song usually traded sexual favors to the miller so she did not have to pay for the ground. Also, in her British lands, the word corn did not mean maize, but was also to describe any hard shell grain like wheat.
Oh.
So, basically, you know, trading favors.
Okay.
You know, so that's what it's all about.
All right.
Got it?
I can dig it.
That a girl. Jane Asgeirsson. Wow. I think you are either Swedish or Danish, and that is phenomenal. She says, Mary, you are welcome to join my Outlander watching gatherings anytime. Aww. She is right across the border of Massachusetts.
Thank you.
Janine, you're my girl. And if you want to have Mary come, just email us. Maybe we'll show up for a small fee. I'm kidding. No, we'll show up for free. Actually, we'll pay you. Just to have friends.
Oh, we have friends. We just don't get to see them because we have a little kid.
That's exactly. So we got to like pay people to like bear with us through our kid.
We bribed a friend to come over tonight. We gave him chicken.
We did. We had to feed him.
Come on over.
Dude, we need some social life. Please come over. We'll cook you dinner. What do we got for Instagram?
All right. Our Instagram friends. A lot of them hated on Frank.
Really?
Like way too many to even write.
Oh, no
but
one's
that was
like
the
this episode,
general
then.
Consensus on Instagram was that there was too much Frank and too little Jamie, and they could have actually done without the flashback scenes.
Now, are these book readers or are these people show watchers?
I don't know. They don't always put.
Because
what
I'm seeing
are.
A very split divide on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Like the people that were book readers hated all the Frank stuff.
Okay.
But the people that weren't book readers were like, oh, cool. Like we get to see a chance to see Frank. We get to flesh that story out a little bit more.
I don't know. Well, Aunt Goggy had a very different opinion. She said that the episode was quite a ride and that it was a bold move to open up the Frank storyline, mm-hmm. but overall quite effective. She really liked the back and forth between 1743 and 1945. I think it's 1943, is it?
No, 1945.
Okay, it is fine.
Because the war's over.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Loved that there were key moments from the book interspersed. Blurrific 063. Absolutely loved it. And said it was sweet 1 minute and gut-wrenching the next. Yes. Took me from highs to desperate lows. I agree, it was a whirlwind. And Dexter's grandma loves this episode. Every episode gets better and better. Loved seeing the books and the show makes it even better. The entire cast is wonderful, and the scenery showing off Scotland is wonderful. April is a bit far off, but definitely gives us something to look forward to.
Dexter's grandma, great name. I wonder if she like is really into the show.
I think
Dexter.
It's Dexter's grandma. It's Dexter's GMA. So
whatever it is.
That's what I'm assuming. And joyfully centered, our last Instagram comment. I loved this. The music was woven so well throughout the episode, yet I could hear each character's themes and loved the nuances between time periods. I love seeing Hugh Monroe and his gift, a dragonfly in amber. My husband thought that the red coat braid scenes were the most powerful.
Yep.
Big hats off to the entire Outlander ensemble. Great review, joyfully sound. And honestly, I keep hearing the music more and more, I feel like, in each episode, and I just need the soundtrack. Whew, it's
I know.
So good.
I agree. And Bear McCreary, who, if you guys don't know, he is the one who composes all the music. He has done an absolutely wonderful job.
Yes.
And as they were running up to the stones to meet each other, you know what I was reminded of?
What?
I was reminded of Lost at the end of season one, spoiler alert, when they're on the raft and they're leaving the island and you have Michael Giacchino's sweeping soundtrack behind it. And, you know, I remember watching that scene like silent and being like, oh, wow, they're leaving on the raft. Like, that's kind of cool. But when you put in Giacchino's music, I teared up.
Yeah.
I teared up because like it was so sweepingly beautiful.
It's another character. It's a whole different character.
It is a character to the show. I remember they used to say they wrote the music into the script mm-hmm. in Lost specifically because they knew Giacchino's music was so beautiful.
I love it. Well, Bear McCreary is doing just the same as we especially got to feel in this episode.
What do you say we get to the voicemails, kid?
You got it.
All right, let's do it.
Hi, guys. It's Marie Quiltnut. Blackjack was just awful tonight. I was sitting on the edge of my seat. I was so nervous. I think I forgot to breathe. But Tobias nailed the acting. But for a book reader, this was a great way to end this episode for next season. I can't wait. Love you guys. Bye.
Awesome episode of Outlander this evening. Leaving us hanging until next April. Way to go, guys.
There was too much Frank, for one. For two, that episode and that leaving of the scene was not enough to justify a spanking, which I hear is going to happen. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, guys. Thank you for those calls. About Frank, I can't believe the unbelievable, like parting of the seas and as it relates to this character and everybody else that has watched this show, at least for this particular episode. A lot of people loved it, like me, and a lot of people hated it. And obviously some of our listeners did. But yeah, again, leaving us hanging till April. Oh man, tough thing to accept. I don't know how we're going to do it. All right, let's get to the next set of calls.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Sandy from Washington, D.C., and I saw your tweet about getting a little feedback this week, so I thought I'd call in. First of all, I just wanted to say, and this might be a little spoiler for Blake, unfortunately, but it was good to see Roger. We were expecting to see him a little earlier, but anyway, it was really good to see him. And the second thing I wanted to comment on was the whole part about Frank, which was not expected. And I guess I'm kind of getting it that they want to make sure that to make Claire's desire to get to those stones, to continue to make it real and substantive and something that is still a part of the picture. And that we also wanted to make the comparisons between Blackjack Randall and Frank, which is obvious from how Frank seemed to be spiraling out of control in his pursuit of finding out what happened to Claire. We see him drinking. We see him getting rough with people who, you know, obviously they were attacking him, so he can handle himself. He's not just a bookish historian. So it's those comparisons that we get to see, and it kind of builds up to, in the viewer's mind, the comparisons between Frank and Blackjack. And I think the last thing I want to talk about is Claire running towards the stones when she spots them. And obviously we've just seen all these scenes with Frank searching for her. So it's very fresh in our minds that he wants her back and she wants to get back to the stones. So that connection is still there. She's only been married to Jamie for a few days. So in spite of the great sex and the wonderful wedding, it's still, you know, she's still married to Frank. And so running towards the stones is kind of like a no-brainer. But what makes it even more of a no-brainer is something that actually your compatriots in the other podcast, the Scott and Sassenach, brought up. And that was something about, you know, that Claire has just been through killing someone. She's in shock. She's experienced a little post-traumatic stress there. And also, having to know how to kill someone and killing someone is like part of her life there in the 18th century, which was not a part of her life in 1940s. And she's running towards the stones, not just for Frank, but for the relative sanity of the 1940s, where she could live a much more peaceful life and with all the modern conveniences and not having to worry about getting raped and killed and killing someone in return. So anyway, these are the things that I picked up, and actually picked up a lot of other things, but you know, this is only, I can only go on so long, and I hope you get more feedback. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling in, Sandy. Actually, I wanted to address your voicemail right away because it's a great one. First, you are what it sounds like to be a reader who actually appreciates what they're trying to do with Frank and also how it relates to the Jamie and Claire story. So number one, that always makes me feel good because I'm Team Frank. But you are allowing the show to be itself, which I think is important. Are the books a wealth of information? Is it like this fountain of awesomeness? I'm sure that it is, but the show also has to be its own entity as well. In regards to Claire, Lonnie and Alistair at the Scott and Sassenach are awesome, and they always have great analysis of this show. So in regards to her being, Claire being in shock and that she wants to get back to the 40s, yes, that makes a lot of sense. It's my contention that it doesn't need, you don't need shock to get back to those stones. As soon as you see them, I think that something clicks in your brain like, oh my God, I have to get back to where I need to go, because that wasn't the whole point the entire time. You don't need shock to do that. But is she part of this time? No, she's not. And even though she may be comfortable lately and she is having great sex and all those things, she is a woman of the 40s, even though it's making it seem like, the show is making it seem like that she belongs in the 1740s and not the 1940s. So with that said, yes, great analysis by those guys. And thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Guys, I really loved your podcast. It is wonderful to listen to. This is Katrina in Oklahoma. And I just want to make sure that we're all of the understanding that April the 4th is next Saturday. Okay, I know it's not, but it's going to be a good wait. Thank you guys for keeping us all informed and making it fun at the same time.
Hey, Mary and Blake. This is Dina Hervey down in Georgia. I know many people have complaints about showing so much of Frank and not enough Jamie in this episode. However, Blake, as a reader, I know that it needed to be shown to open a window into Claire's mind. I mean, holy cow, think of what's happened to her in such a short time. I'd be drunk all the time, too. Probably stoned on mushrooms if I could find them. I loved all the hand-holding and canoodling shots of Jamie and Claire like they were in high school under the bleachers. I mean, you couldn't slap that grin off Jamie's face if he tried. And, of course, Angus teaching Claire how to kill someone. So sweet. I finally feel like the Clan McKinsey has accepted her, and she is like their fraternity princess, or whatever that's called. Okay. Now for my face will crack and fall off if I smile Frank back in 1945. I'm glad they showed him trying to find Claire and working with the police, his frustration and his angst, well, as much of it as he can show. The part where he gets waylaid by the two thugs in the alley was a good write-in, and did you know this Black Jack? He was using to beat the crap out of his creeps. However, when Frank leaves her suitcase on that bed and closes that door, that just burnt my biscuits. How dare he? He is off my prison star list now for good, if he ever was on it. Anyway, all right, now here's where the story starts veering away from the book, and I know people went crazy, but Frank finally decides that, well, maybe I'll go drag my skinny arse up to the screen just in case, and yeah, there might be some truth to that old rat story about standing stones and going back in time. He's supposed to be such a great historian of the area that he should have given that a try much earlier. Anyway, Claire is in clinical shock from being in a Jamie Lovelock on the grass, and then suddenly she's ushered to Creepville, where she had to kill the lobsterback deserter trying to finish the job that Jamie started. But I wanted to say that the filming of this situation was very well done, where the screen is blurred and in slow motion. I mean, it's exactly like a person would feel in such a situation. It was, I guess, Scottish PTSD or whatever, and she really, really needed a liquor drink then, several of them. Of course, Frank, on another parallel plane, albeit a mighty thin one, is calling her name at the stones. Good googly-wiggly. They actually physically hear each other. Holy auditory brain tingle back, girl. Very far-fetched, but hey, the split screen of the springing out of the earth ribcage dragging her off and Frank leaving the stones was pretty cool, and the scenery was really nice. Then, dun-dun-dun, Jamie crashes through the window with his gun and the absolutely scariest, true-to-life, best Wrath of Khan face. We need a hashtag for that, like best homicidal look or something. I mean, I think Sam may have had some personal experience going on here, but I mean, I don't know. But love what you do, and just can't wait for April 4th. So talk to you guys later. Bye.
Okay, thank you for those calls. Katrina, thank you. Yes, April is quite far away, and I wish it was next Saturday, like you said, but of course, the fates would have it that it's not. And Dina, thank you for your thoughts. Some great analysis there. A lot of good stuff, especially as it relates to Frank and how you understand what's going on with that. And then Claire being in shock. And then just how the episode ended. You covered it all. I don't need to say anything else. You got it, girl. You put it perfectly.
Oh, my God. I got on with 1 minute to spare because I'm a moron and forgot to call. Anywho, hi, it's Peggy from Newton. Hi. I really like this episode because I know it's coming next. But I was a little frightened by Frank, I have to say. Frank was a little scary. Definitely had a little bit of BJR in him when he was doing that lashing, don't you think? I think I wrote that on Twitter. He had a little too much swing in that arm. Looked like he did a couple beatings far before, maybe during the war, maybe, possibly. And I like the fact that they showed the very funny side of all the different characters when they were just, you know, hanging around the fire and joking around. But, you know, it was really good to see that they had added that part of, you know, the book where they do get attacked by people or band of marauders or whatever it is. But they skipped the part between the night before and that. So that was a, actually no, it was the part after. Until the next day. And that was a little sad because it was interesting to see the dynamic between the married couple and the rest of the clan being like 20 feet away from them. And then they're like getting it on, but of course they didn't put that in there because they had to put a lot of Frank stuff. But hey. Frank is a cool guy, but yeah, I'm questioning his love to his wife. Boy, he did leave that suitcase there. Not okay. I think he just thinks she cheated. But anyway, I look forward to seeing the new season and to hear the podcast because I know Blake's got some serious outlandish conspiracy theories going on. So I hope you guys had a great weekend. Talk to you again soon. Bye.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Candy from Tampa, Florida. Just wanted to call and tell you how much I enjoy your podcast and look forward to it every week. I've read every book that Diana Gabaldon has published involving characters from Outlander, plus short stories and novellas, and I'm an uber fan, and I love this show beyond words. I don't expect everything to be like the book because it isn't the book. I love the new stuff we're getting from the show. I consider it a gift. If I miss something that the show omitted, I can just go and pick up my book, and it's right there. It hasn't gone anywhere. So it's all cool with me. As far as Episode 8, Both Sides Now, I appreciated Frank's point of view. It was heartbreaking, to say the least. I believe that the show is building up Frank's character and downplaying Jamie's to create conflict and tension for Claire. And I understand that. I have confidence that we will see the Jamie we all know and love. Where the show is at now is not even to the halfway point of the book. So there is so much to come. It is crazy. Thanks for what you're doing, and I'm off to watch Once Upon a Time. Take care and good night.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Jen from Austin, Texas. Just wanted to say I'm a huge fan of the podcast, and I'm so sad that we're going on hiatus, and I won't have you guys to listen to every week. I thought this last episode was beautiful, and the ending was a good cliffhanger, but nothing too extreme. So that's all I have. Thanks so much.
Thank you for those calls, guys. Yes, as it relates to Peggy, thank you. Great analysis with Frank there about maybe giving some beatings out when it comes to him being at the war. It's definitely a possibility. He seemed like he got it going on pretty quickly. And then him leaving the case at the end. I think that's just him letting go. That seems to be the theme of this podcast, letting go. Yeah, letting go of Claire and trying to move on. Of course, he doesn't because he stops at Craig DeDune and he realizes that he needs to keep going. And Candy, I love your enthusiasm for the show being itself. And it's a great perspective that you have. And I think a lot of people should take this into consideration. Of course, this is coming from a show watcher. If you do want something from the books and it's not there in the show, guess what? It is in your book. You can still relive it. You can still appreciate it, still love it, still want it, still care about it. It's right there. It's not going anywhere. And great perspective on that. And Jen, yes, thank you for this good analysis about the cliffhanger. Is it good? Yes. It's great. I mean, it's good. It's Outlander. I mean, again, like I said, half of Outlander is better than a full great episode of anything on network TV. But it wasn't, you know, I expected a little bit more out of it. But again, I think the show shot itself in the foot. It expected its viewers to think, oh, this is the finale, and it's not. And it can't allow itself to be the finale. So I think that's why we ended up with a cliffhanger that was good, but not great. All right, let's get into the last set of calls.
Hi, this is Barbara. I'm calling about the Outlander cast, the show. I just want to let you know, Jamie and Claire are my favorites on the show. I was hoping that you guys would have put it on a lot sooner than April 4th, or if you could put it on iTunes, that would be much better. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Krisha. You asked me why I did like the cross-cutting so much. I think it is a perfect way to express the inner conflict of Claire. She's torn between two time periods, between two worlds, actually, almost, between two men. And I think the cross-cutting made that really perceptible for the audience. We could feel this conflict. And I liked the idea behind that there is a loving husband who is desperately searching for her, that she's not forgotten, and that she, at the same time, is starting to enjoy her life with the Highlanders a lot, especially with Jamie, but that the Highlands are also really a dangerous place for a woman. And everything culminates in the situation at the stones, and you really want her to touch it because of this cross-cutting. But at the same time, you think, no, there's Jamie. And yeah, you just also have this inner conflict, the same conflict she feels. And this is all because of the cross-cutting, and that's why I really, really loved it.
Krisha, you are a girl after my own heart, and I am so thankful that you called in to explain your love of the cross-cutting because it makes perfect sense. And I loved what they tried to do there to juxtapose Frank versus Jamie for Claire, and I think they did a wonderful job on it. So thank you for that explanation. And in regards to that first caller, yeah, if I had any leverage or them getting it on iTunes or whatever, I would, but this isn't Stars, and I would love to be able to help you, but I'm just not that capable, so I'm sorry. But anyway, all right, everybody, thank you for those calls, much appreciated as always, and thank you for the awesome interaction. Great job, guys.
It is now time for this week's Outlander Tweet of the Week.
Jen Madsen says, I may or may not have threatened my kids about getting out of bed tonight for Outlander.
Oh my God, Jen, I want to know how old your kids are, because we can't do that to our son.
We want to.
Oh.
We just have to get him drunk with whiskey.
No, stop it. Oh my goodness, we do not. We
Child Protective Services,
we try to
please
tell
don't come
him,
to our house.
We look at him, we're like, little baby Reese, Right, we're going to be watching Outlander, and we don't feel like pausing it five times.
I give him like a good like pep talk. I'm like, all right, kid, listen.
here's how it's going down.
Mom and Dad got a job to do. We got to watch a show. We got a live tweet, and then we got a podcast. Right? Don't screw around. This ain't screwing around time. Go to bed. Stay in bed.
It almost does the opposite.
No, it like pisses him off even more. Makes him more like convicted to come out and ruin our time together.
Oh no.
That's all right. I don't know. But hey, Jen Madsen, congratulations on being this week's Tweet of the Week. All right, Marvin, what do you say we close out the show?
All right, everyone, thank you so incredibly much for tuning in to this week's episode of Outlander Cast. Now, a lot of people have asked us what we're going to be doing in the hiatus. We are going to stay with you. Dun, 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 dun. How exciting. We are not going to be podcasting every week, but we're definitely going to have some podcasts sent out. So you're going to want to make sure that you're subscribed so that it automatically comes to your mobile device or to your computer. Keep your eye on Facebook and Twitter. You know, you can even have notifications sent to you when we post on either of those. So maybe that's a good idea. But we're going to be having some really interesting episodes coming up during the hiatus.
One of which we can confirm will be the history lesson that everybody has been asking me about, which we are going to have during the break. There are a couple of other things, like we said at the beginning of this podcast, that we have lined up, but they are not 100% like locked in, confirmed quite yet. So I don't want to say it. They're basically 99% confirmed, but they're not 100% confirmed yet. So once we get that 100%, we will let you guys know. But they are coming. Be prepared for it.
A few other people have asked us if we're going to be doing a book read during the hiatus and if Blake is finally going to read the books. The answer is no.
No, I will not be reading ahead. I will not be reading the first Outlander book. I will not do it just because I want the show to speak for itself.
And that is the sole reason. We want to make sure that the podcast has a voice of someone who hasn't read the books. You know, it's really interesting for me as a book reader to listen and see things through Blake's eyes that he gets to see differently. You know, you weren't really excited, as you said, about Little Roger.
Oh, wait.
What?
Stop the presses. Stop the music. We didn't do our Outlandish Theory of the Week.
Oh, but you didn't write it in.
I know, but that's my fault, but I'm just saying we didn't do it.
Oh, okay.
All right, here we go. Outlandish Theory of the Week.
Ready? Go.
Horrocks is not a good dude. In fact, I am willing to bet that he was set up just by BJR just to get Jamie.
Ooh.
I bet that's what's happened. BJR set this up. Remember how I said that BJR, you haven't heard the last of him yet?
Yes.
Now, obviously, that came true, as have a lot of other of my Outlandish theories we talked about early in this podcast. I'm so freaking smart. It's great. But BJR, I guarantee you, set this up with Horrocks, because there's no way that he was going to let go of Jamie or Claire. There was no way it was going to happen.
I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
So all I'm going to say is that BJR set this up, and he was trying to get Jamie, and he knows exactly what's happening, and that's why I think he laughed, because he was like, dude, I set all this up, and I didn't even need to use it. He just showed up at my window.
That's a very interesting theory.
So that's my Outlandish Theory of the Week.
All right.
And I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
All right, let's close out the show for real this time.
Friends, please, as I said, stay in touch with us over the hiatus. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail. Our handle on all four of those is OutlanderCast.
Mm-hmm. And Mary, if they can't get enough of Mary and Blake outside of Outlander, where do they go?
You can head on over to the Living Reminders podcast. It's all about the show The Leftovers that just recently aired on HBO. And since you are a premium cable subscriber, most likely, because you're watching Stars, head on over. Now that you don't have a show to watch on the weekends, watch The Leftovers. Totally different breed of show.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Our podcast, The Living Reminders, will help you break it down. And if any of you have children or know someone who's having a baby or are pregnant, you're going to want to check out our podcast called Parent Cast, where we talk about all things in the adventures of parentdom.
Getting back to The Leftovers real quick, you guys have heard me wax poetic about Damon Lindelof for this entire run and Lost. I cannot tell you and give you enough recommendation to watch The Leftovers. It is a fantastic show, And the benefit is you get to listen to more of us. And the other benefit is that we get to break it down for you and help you. We have a ton of cool interviews on that show. We interviewed one of the writers of the show. We actually interviewed one of the directors of the show. So we were getting background information. Please head over to The Living Reminders and check that show out and get involved with it, because it was a pleasure to watch it and talk about it.
And heck, you know what? Rewatch all of the episodes of Outlander. Re-listen to our podcast, or if you're new to Outlander Cast, start again at the beginning and check out the other Outlander podcasts. There is the Outlander podcast with Summer and Ginger, who are just so fantastic. They also have read the books, did a whole kind of book review. I mean, they've already up to in the mid-50s of their podcast. So during the hiatus, definitely check them out. And also the Scott and the Sassenach. Love them. They are another married couple. And Alistair's been without reading the books. I think he's going to read them, though. So he'll add another fun aspect to the story come season 1.5. But definitely check them out, because we want to spread the love. And speaking of spreading the love, continue to rate and review us on iTunes, please.
Please do so. Because we that will expose us to more people and get this Outlander community that much more popular. And it'll get more people to interact with our show. Speaking of that, too, just because it's the hiatus, don't stop interacting with us. Get to us on Twitter. Get to us on Facebook. Email us. Talk to us. Just leave us some love or leave us some hate. Tell me that I'm annoying. I'm cool with that. That's fine. A lot of people have already done that on iTunes.
Aw, Blake, I still love you.
It's okay. I love you too, my darling. So either way, don't let us go, because we're not going to let you go.
Let it go. All right, everyone. Once again, thank you so incredibly much for tuning in to listen to Outlander Cast. My name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
And we will talk to you very soon.